Yesterday, in the tutorial, we saw the Mobius group of transformations, and there was a link to a video about an interpretation of those transformations in terms of transformation on the Riemann sphere. Now, those are a subgroup of the conformal transformation that you can actually do on a complex plane. The conformal group in two dimensions is infinite dimensional. And in today's tutorial, we will explore the algebraic structure of this group a little bit in the context of a two-dimensional field theory. We are not going to get into field theory details, but we'll just look at the operator. So that's an advertisement for today's tutorial. Now, no course in complex analysis would be complete without using the Cauchy residue theorem, doing some fancy integrals, right? So we have to do this. There's no other way. So let us remind ourselves what the residue theorem is. So suppose we have a holomorphic function which has singularities at these points, z1, z2, z3, dot, dot, zk. But we do a contour integral of the holomorphic function over some contour C. Then the residue theorem tells us that this contour integral is given by 2 pi i, and remember where this 2 pi i comes from. It comes from deforming this contour and into smaller circles around around the singularities, and then essentially we do a 1 over z integral, and that's really what gave us the 2 pi i. Times the sum of the residues 1 to k of the function at. So just to emphasize, I've kind of drawn some singularities of the function outside the contour. And the sum here goes from 1 to k. So it does not include any of the contribution to the residues from outside the singularity. So before we do some examples, let us recall a useful result about how to calculate the residues of simple poles. So very frequently we'll come across functions of this form. So this is just something I told you guys before. Or let's put a z here. So here q is, so these are called rational functions, a function that can be expressed as as a ratio of two different functions. And q has, we'll assume that q is some sort of polynomial, and that z naught is a simple pole of q. That means, sorry, simple zero of q. That means q goes to zero at z naught, but its derivative doesn't. And we'll also assume that p is also non-zero, at z naught, and that it's not infinite. We don't require p.
No, true prime.
I should pay attention to what I write. So then the residue of so in that case, you know, the residue of f of z at z equals to z naught is given by so here we are essentially, the L'Hopital rule. So this is, you know, if you're, most of the time when you're actually computing residues, you'll use this formula more than anything else. Unless you've got residues of higher pole, poles with higher order poles, yes. So our first example is a rather simple trigonometric integral . So this is actually an integral on the circle . And for definiteness, we take A is greater than B is greater than zero and real. So if we want to use the residue theorem to compute this integral, we want to turn this into a complex integral first. So now note that if we take z, our complex variable, not to be the full complex variable, but you know, we restrict it to be on the circle, then cosine of theta becomes this. And then we can write this integral now as minus 2i, a contour integral over C, d of z by 2za plus b plus bz squared, where C is the unit circle. Okay, so C is basically where C is they need a circle. Okay? Right. So now, what we have to do is to basically find the residues of this integrand. So now it's all algebra. So let's look at the poles of this guy, the integrand, is going to be the zeros of your denominator. So our denominator involves this quadratic polynomial. Which has zeros at so now I'm reverting back to the notation where I'm actually explicitly specifying the sign of the square root. You know, that's not something we do when we are in complex domain, complex analysis. Now, because we chose a to be greater than b, that means minus a by b is less than minus 1. That means if we choose the minus sign, so if we choose z minus, that point is outside the unit circle, right? So now if you just do the algebra and you can show that z minus times z minus z plus is 1. That means z plus is inside the unit circle, right? So the residue of this integrand that we're interested in is to be, we have to evaluate that residue at the pole z plus. So, I mean, this is just algebra. There's, you know, these are details. These are details will depend on your function. But, you know, depending on the integral, you might have to do different kinds of gymnastics, right? So this is a gym. There's nothing of intrinsic value in these manipulations. Okay, so. Right. So what's the residue of that function of the integrand? Is given by, so we take the limit z goes to z plus, the limit is z goes to z plus, and z minus z plus, we multiply so these two guys cancel out, and then you're left with 2i z plus minus z minus once you take the limit. And that turns out to be minus ib divided by a squared minus b squared once you put in the explicit values of z plus and z minus. And so we multiply the whole thing by 2 pi I, so we get 2 pi b by a squared minus b squared. So we didn't have to use any fancy theorems or anything other than the residue theorem. Now, it's very rare that the integral that you want to compute, the real integral, because a lot of physics and engineering problem, it's a real integral that you want to compute. It's very rare that that real integral can be interpreted as a complex integral. Like here, you know, the contour, the circle is, can be thought of as a contour on the complex plane. So most of the time, what happens is that the real integral that you're interested in would be part of a contour on a of a contour integral on a complex plane, and you want to choose the contour in such a way that the part of the integral coming from the contour which is not on the on the real line that you're interested in, you know, vanishes in some limit, right? So that you can interpret that contour in the complex integral as a real integral in that limit, and then use the Cauchy residue theorem. So that you basically want to have your cake and eat it too, as they say in England. So it's not always that you can compute a real integral in terms of complex, contour integral. So the conditions under which you can do that, there's various kind of theorems. And I'm not going to give you an exhaustive list of these theorems. I'm just going to give you three theorems which are often used and, you know, crop up in physics examples quite a lot. So semicircular contours are very popular. And we'll see why. So our first theorem about semicircular contour is that suppose we have some function f of z such that the modulus of the function is less than or equal to some real positive number divided by r to the power k, you know, on some contour parametrized by where theta is between 2 pi and 0, or it can be between 2 pi, pi. So in other words, this gamma is a semicircle either on the upper half plane or the lower half plane. Yeah?
Is the integral I here? If you take b to 0, I don't think the answer reduces correctly. The integral shouldn't be 0, b is 0.
Yes, the polynomial in the denominator, it's not monic. Actually, there's... When you express the polynomial in the denominator as z minus the roots,
right,
you need to multiply by b. That will cancel that b in the numerator. And
so the b will be gone. Okay, that makes sense. Then you have 2 pi over
k. Yeah, yeah. That b will be gone in that case.
But I think it's also in the notes, though.
Right?
And it's incorrect in the notes.
Really?
It shouldn't be 2 pi b, I think. I think it should just be 2 pi.
Oh, you mean there shouldn't be a b here?
Should not be.
Oh, I see. Okay. Let's see. All right. Okay.
The polynomial Q.
Yeah, like your denominator should be B times Z minus Z.
Because your B is Z squared and your.
Right. So I probably made a mistake in this. You're saying I made a mistake in P?
No, that's not.
So there your denominator should be b times z minus into.
Oh, you mean here? Ah, okay. Right, and there should be b here, right? All right, okay, thanks. I'll correct the notes afterwards. Okay, so coming back to our semicircular contour integrals. And we also assume that k is positive, real, and greater than 1. So if f satisfies all these conditions, okay, k is, and m is, of course, greater than 0 as well, and real, then then this integral is bounded by this, and this vanishes as r goes to infinity. So as you take your semicircular contour to be larger and larger, this integral vanishes. So let's see an application of this. So consider the integral 0 to infinity . So we can evaluate this. First, before going over to complex variables, you know, let's just let's observe that this is an even function. So we can write the integral as half of the integral over the whole of the real line. So the complex version of the integrand is going to be this guy. So this has poles in the upper half plane. So on the upper half plane, this has poles at plus IA and plus IB. And on the lower half plane, it has poles on minus IA and minus IB. So now it's kind of easy. The integral is then should be equal to half, 2 pi I times half the sum of the residues at these poles. So we take limit of z goes to I of A, z minus I of A. Let me just write the final expression, because you multiply this guy with this guy, and then what you get is z plus IA, but the one involving B remains unchanged, the factor. And then you also have to add the residues at B, IB. So the factor in the denominator involving A remains unchanged. And then you put, you take the limit, add them up, and I hope Mathematica agrees with this. And that's your result. So in case, so this was the case where A was not equal to B. If A is equal to B, then we can apply our formula for computing the residue for higher order pool, and I'm not going to write it out, you know, the answer is 4a cubed, right? Which is different. So that if you take the limit here going to a to b, you get the same result, yeah. Okay. So what is happening here? So what is happening here is that we started with an integral, a contour which went from minus r to plus r. And it's symmetric around the origin. And this was our contour, gamma, plus this guy. And then we let r go to infinity in a way. So we basically took r to infinity so that, you know, both sides of this integral actually, the part of the contour on the real line went to infinity, you know, in the same way. So we given, and then we close the contour in the counterclockwise direction. But what that theorem is telling us is that the contribution to this integral, to the complex integral, from the semicircular bit is going to go to zero. But because there are two poles of the integrand inside this closed contour, the complex integral is given by 2 pi I times the sum of the residues at this pole, as this pole and this pole. But the part of the integral, part of the contribution to the integral coming from the semicircular bit is zero. And therefore, you know, we get the integral on the real line. And that's also given that, you know, that is equal to the sum of the residues. In this case, it was irrelevant whether we closed the contour on the upper half plane or the lower half plane. We would have gotten the same result. But there are cases where the integrand that you take will grow exponentially on the lower half plane, but will go to zero very rapidly on the upper half plane, or vice versa. And in that case, that behavior forces you to choose whether you close your contour on the upper half plane or the lower half plane. And that is going to be our next topic. So this notion is formalized in Jordan's lemma. So often you have to do integrals of this form. Anyone who has done Fourier analysis knows that. But you have to do, so this is the real, x is a real variable, so this is actually, you know, there's a real part and an imaginary part. But the integral is on the real line. Now, suppose, so that gamma of r is a semicircular contour of radius r on the upper half plane So this is, so we take this to be a semicircular contour on the upper half plane. When omega is positive, when omega is negative, we'll take the semicircular contour to be the, on the lower half plane. Okay, so you'll see very, it's easy to see, you'll see why the sine of omega will dictate whether this gamma that you take is on the upper half plane or the lower half plane. So centered about the origin, it's actually important that these, in these calculations, these contours are centered around the origin. Otherwise, because when you take the r to infinity, you have to go to infinity on both sides on the real line in the same way. Otherwise, you actually don't get a well-defined answer. Okay, so let M of R be the maximum of the modulus of the function, you know, evaluated. So if you take the complex, you know, on this contour. And so in addition, you know, let omega be greater than zero. Of course, this is not an absolutely necessary condition. And let M of R go to zero as R goes to infinity. Okay. If these conditions are satisfied, then Jordan's lemma tells us so in that case, Jordan's lemma tells us that the integral over the semicircular bit of the contour, sorry, the integral over the integral that we were interested in initially is given by 2 pi I times the sum over the upper half plane of the residues of the function f of z e to the power I of omega z. Okay, so this is the statement of Jordan's lemma. If omega is negative, if omega is negative, then this lemma becomes, there's a minus sign, and there's a lower half plane. Okay. Right. All right. So let's do an example that is uses this lemma. Right. So because, although, yeah, because you, Right. Because then the contour is traversed in a clockwise sense. And to make contact with residue theorem, you have to flip the sign. All right. So example is so now we have put a essentially the same thing as before, but now we have put a sine of x in the numerator. So consider the integral. So this is going to be the imaginary part of this guy. And this is exactly what we have in Jordan's lemma, where omega is 1. So, you know, rather than just applying Jordan's lemma, let's just, let's look at the integrand of this function. And, I'm going to say this on, C, where C is say this contour. So this is plus R, this is minus R, and this is gamma of R. So let's now, what happens is that as R goes to infinity, let's look at the numerator. Numerator is ix plus iy. So this guy is ix e to the power minus y. So this bit is going to be oscillatory as, on gamma, but y is going to be, y is positive on the upper half plane. And so this is going to be exponential, this is going to, you know, go to zero very, very quickly. And that's essentially the reason why when we take the limit of R goes to infinity, you know, intuitive reason why, you know, the contribution from this guy goes to zero. So this polynomial has zeros at, so the poles of our integrand are at, I'm just writing down the result for completeness. And now if you compute the residues, then this is the result you get. So far we have done integrals where the complex version of our integral has residues, has poles. Let me rephrase that. Try it again. So far we have done integrals where the integrand has poles in places other than the real line. But there might be cases where you want to do a real integral, but it involves a complex function which has poles on the real line. So what do you do in that case? And that actually shows up. A very important example you will see when you do in fact, QFT1, that when you compute the propagator, the Feynman propagator actually has poles on the real line. So to actually solve the wave equation with source, even in classical electrodynamics, when you solve the wave equation with source, you actually find that there's a pole on the real line. Actually, it's at the origin, I think, because it's a massless case. And then you either go above the pole or below the pole, which determines whether you are taking the retarded propagator or the advanced propagator. So what we are about to do is actually very important physically. Last year, I actually had a tutorial on this, but this year I decided to bump that off the tutorial so that I can do more conformal, the conformal group. But if somebody wants to work on that, let me know and I'll give you the problem. So, the next we are going to prove a very simple theorem, but it's very cute and easy, and it's cute not just because it's because of its it's cute because of its name actually. It's called the mouse hole contour theorem. So we are going to consider mouse hole contours. And the picture on the in my notes on the wiki is actually, there's a typo. I'll correct that after the lecture. So suppose you have some function f of z, which has a pole, a simple pole, at z equals to a. So it's not really about, it doesn't have to be at the origin. And the residue of the function at z equals to a is sigma. So now consider a contour phi epsilon of this form. So it's centered around a, and it's an arc of radius epsilon. So if I draw the picture, it'll look like some. So this is our point A, and there's an arc. And this is the radius, epsilon. And and this angle, we'll take it to be alpha. And this angle, we'll take it to be beta. So, our specification of the contour, we'll say that the angle T ranges from alpha to beta. So then the theorem is that in the limit, when epsilon goes to zero, if you do the integral over the contour, then this is beta minus alpha times I sigma, where sigma, remind you, sigma is the residue of the function at z equals to a. So the proof is very easy, and that's why I really am doing it here. So let's define a new function g of z such that g of z is, doesn't have a pole at z equals to a. So this is an often used trick. Like, if you have some function with some pole, you sometimes want to define another function which has that pole kind of, you know, taken out of it. So now consider the integral that we're interested in. Now, this guy has this part and this part. And you know, this, by continuity, because G is, doesn't have a pole at A, you know, the contribution from the G part of this integral will go to zero. So here we just have a very simple integral with the limits. And if you just, you know, so we are just integrating over this guy. And if you do the integral, and then take epsilon, go to zero, then you essentially get, you basically get this result. Okay. So the example that I'm going to do for to illustrate this is, I find it very interesting because at the, when you first look at it, it doesn't look like you could apply this theorem to that case. So first, so this is the example we want to consider. The integral from 0 to infinity of x minus sine of x by x cubed. So before we even do anything, let's just note that this also, the integrand is also an even function, because both the denominator and the numerator are odd functions. So we can do the usual trick of rewrite this guy as half of an integral from minus infinity to plus infinity. Okay. So what kind of complex integral should we do to actually be able to do this result? So consider this function, which is now this guy, when you reduce, when you look at this function on the real axis, it's still a complex function, right? Because it has a real part and an imaginary part, even on the real axis. But if you take the imaginary part of this function on the real axis, you get this, you get this thing, right? So the imaginary part of this function on the real axis gives you the integrand that we're interested in. But let's just look at the pole at, you know, z equals to zero. So let's expand this. And we, when we expand this, just expand the exponential. And we see that this guy cancels out. But there is a triple pole at 1 at z equals to 0. Which means that we can't really use that mouse hole contour theorem as it is. So what we do is that we define a new function, which is our old function, but see that there's a minus 1 over z cubed is the term that is problematic. We add 1 over z cubed. So what we have done is that by adding this, is that when we reduce this function h on the real line and look at its imaginary part, the imaginary part of this function on the real line is the same as the imaginary part of this function on the real line. So the imaginary part of these two functions on the real line are the same. And by introducing this guy, adding this guy, we have removed the triple pole at z equals to 0. Instead, what we have kept is that this z cubed will, you know, cancel z squared, and this would become 1 over z. So this term now becomes a simple pole at z equals to 0. And now we can use our mouse hole contour theorem to this guy. I mean, I'm not sure if in real life you'll ever come across such a cute integral like this, but you know, it's just very nice, you know. So okay. So then now we choose the contour to be this. Maybe I should use a little bit of color. So we go from minus r to some small value of minus r and have a radius of there like this, and then plus r to plus of r. And then we close this over, excuse my drawing. So this is a semicircle of radius r. Now when you, and then we do this integral over C1 plus, so I call this C1, this part C2, this part C3, this part C4. So we do the integral over C1 plus C2 plus C3 plus C4. Of h of z d of z. And when we take, then what we do is that we take r go to infinity, then the contribution from C4 goes to 0 using those two other theorems that we used before, the first semicircular contour theorem and Jordan's lemma. You'll see that the different terms go to 0 because of those. So we are left, and then we also take r go to 0. And for this guy, we use the mouse hole theorem on C3. And I should go to the other side. So we have the integral over C1 plus the integral over C2 minus the integral over C3 and so the angle here is from pi to 0 times I by 2, and therefore we get pi I by 2, and this gives us the result that 0 to infinity x minus sine of x by x cubed is pi by 4. Okay. All right. So our last example today is going to involve logarithm. And in today's tutorial, I will set a problem which generalizes this example. I'm not sure, given the time limits of the tutorial, whether everyone will be able to do it, but you're welcome to try it at home. Yes? How did I get it? Oh, I just like, right. So basically, you know, I didn't get it. I copied it from a book, but if I were to get it, you know, the way I would argue it is that, first of all, we need combination of terms which would allow me to get rid of the contribution on a semicircular contour. And this looks like, yeah, this guy could be, I could apply Jordan's lemma to this, and I could apply the other theorem to this. And then the other thing is that, you know, whenever you see a sine, you probably want to try some exponential, because you want to use Jordan's lemma there, right? So you try this, and then, you know, if I didn't have an I here, then that wouldn't work, because the real part of this would give me a cosine of x. So that's why I put an I here, because then what we have to do is we take the, because I have to take the imaginary part of this, or I could have tried, I don't know, this, right? That would give me this guy, right? So that could be another, but then the problem would be that could you still actually do that trick of teasing out the triple pole and actually, you know, so, you know, I guess it's, you know, so it'll be roughly something like this, but to get rid of the pole at z equals, the triple pole at z equals to 0, is it absolutely necessary to have I here? So what happens if I didn't have an I here? Then I wouldn't have an I here, and I wouldn't have an I. Then what I'll probably have to do is, I'll probably have to use an I here, right? I probably have to multiply. You see, there's a problem there, because, okay, so if I didn't have an I here, I couldn't have an I here. Then, but this term one, which is the problematic term, wouldn't have an I here, right? So to get rid of this thing, I still have to add exactly this term. But then if I take the real part, so there aren't any i's here, if I take the real part of this, then the real part of h of x is no longer this guy. So therefore, we have to have an I here so that the real part of h of z on the real line coincides with this guy. Yeah?
The two in the denominator there, is that coming from the fact that the residue is now a half after you subtract out the 1 over z cubed part? So the angle difference is pi, but you're dividing by 2.
I think it comes...
You have z squared over 2 factorial. Is it? That's the remaining whole part. So I think that's what's coming from.
Yeah, yeah, from here.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
Okay, the next problem, the next example is probably the most... It involves logarithm, and it's very elegant. And the generalization of this that you'll see in the tutorial is like even more super elegant. So, you know, so far we have really kind of, you know, used integrands. Well, actually, that's not true. This doesn't. Yeah, so far we have used integrands which have some kind of symmetry, you know, odd or even functions. But sometimes, you know, you just, you know, you don't have that. And suppose you are doing an integral of this form, where you're going to 0 to infinity. And f of x, or f of z, has no singularities on the positive real axis. So for this kind of integrals, you know, let's consider this form of contour integral, where you take the complex version of this guy and then multiply it with the log of z, d of z. And the contour that we are going to consider for this is, looks something like this. So it's almost like a big circle, C1. And there is C3 and C4. So you go around C1, go this way on C2, go this way on C3, and then go this way on C4. And C3 has radius r, so the radius of this guy is small r, and the radius of the big C1 is big r. So if you look at the part of this integral which comes from C2 and C4, so the ones that run along the real positive axis, then you can write this as, you know, you go from 0 to infinity, so that's C4, in the limit where r goes to infinity. Then that gives you function of x log of x, d of x. But if you consider the part of the integral coming from plus infinity to 0, So that guy has log of x plus 2 pi I. And that's because around x equals to 0, the log function has a monodromy. So that's where the 2 pi I came from. So if you now flip the limit on the first on this guy, not on this guy, then you get, so if you limit on this second integral, you get 0 to infinity with a minus sign because you flip the limit. You 2 pi I times f of x of d of x. So taking this contour, you know, the even though, you know, your integrand had a log of z, the part of the integral on the positive real axis, the log parts drop out because of the fact that log is a, you know, has monodromy around the origin. Now, if it is true, and you have to do, you know, you have to look at whether it's true or not. If in the limit where big R and goes to infinity and small r goes to 0, the contribution from C1 and C3 go to 0, then we have a way of calculating the integral we're interested in. So, right. So if when r goes to infinity, the contribution from C1 goes to 0, and if when small r goes to 0, and I should say, the contribution from C3 goes to 0, then we have the result that our original integral is given by minus the sum of the residues of f of z times log of z inside our total contour. So that's basically the result. So now let's do the, I have 7 minutes left. That's exactly the amount of time needed to do a controversial integral.
Why do we need the condition for no singularities on positive real axis?
Because then you wouldn't have, then you know your contour wouldn't be 0 to infinity, that contour wouldn't work, right? Because if you go to, if you have a singularity on your integrand, then that integral won't converge, right? So, I mean, generally, when your integrand doesn't blow up within the range of integration that you're doing, so that's.
Negative infinity to infinity, it still does not blow up, even though there was singularity on the origin.
No, it didn't have a singularity at the origin. You mean the x minus sine x by x cubed? No, that function, if you go to x equals to 0, it doesn't have, you know, it doesn't, I don't think it has a no. X, because if you just, if you expand sine, then the leading part cancels out, and then, but then you have the x cubed part, which will be canceling the denominator, so it doesn't have a singularity at the origin. Yeah. All right. So let's, we want to do this integral, say. Now, x has roots of unity. So the denominator has roots of unity at ei pi by 3 ei pi and ei 5 pi by 3, right? So essentially, if you draw a circle, you have these are the points where, so this is a unit circle. These are the points where your integrand has poles. So, but, you know, to apply the theorem, we have to consider the function times log of z. And so just notice that on the unit circle, log of z is just the argument of z. So, right. So to compute the, you know, I mean, this is just a technical detail. To compute the residues of this function, log of z, z cubed plus 1, you can... hang on, what did I mean by that? On the unit circle, right. Okay, so if you go back to our formula for computing residues for rational functions where the denominator has simple zeros, then to compute the residues of this guy, we basically have to just, you know, we can replace this this log of z by the argument, and we just have to evaluate this thing, where this thing is the first derivative of this a polynomial function and evaluate this thing on, you know, on the, at the zeros of the polynomial in the denominator. Okay? So this is kind of a trick to just, you know, to calculate the residues of this function at the zeros of the denominator. And you can verify that the residues at these three points on the circle are given by minus I pi by 18 plus pi by 6 square root of 3, I pi by 3, and minus 5 I pi by 18, 5 pi by 6 over 3. And you add them up, and then you get the result that your integral over of x cubed plus 1 d of x is 2 pi over 3 square root of 3. Okay, so is everyone convinced that you can actually, that instead of doing the computing the residues of this guy, you can actually compute the residues of, you know, you can actually use this formula to compute the residues, right? Right, so that's why, you know, basically, you know, we had P of Z naught, and then we had Q prime of Z naught. But here, what we are doing is that instead of taking the P to be log of Z, we are taking P to be arg of Z, because we are evaluating this on the circle, and on the circle, log of Z and arg of Z, you know, they're the same. It's in, you know, this is just a trick to kind of, you know, make life easier. So, okay, that's all I have. And come to the tutorial today, and we can have more fun with conformal transformations. Okay, thank you for listening. Any questions?
Hello. We got the wrong root.
Sorry, am I erasing? Let me erase the other. Oh, I think somebody comes and erases it, right?
No.
So, man, life at PI is like.